If Adventists, after the great disappointment in 1844, had held fast their faith and followed on unitedly in the opening providence of God, the work would have been completed, and Christ would have come ere this to receive his people to their reward. It was not the will of God that the coming of Christ should be thus delayed. For 40 years did unbelief, murmuring, and rebellion shut out ancient Israel from the land of Canaan. The same sins have delayed the entrance of modern Israel into the heavenly Canaan. 1868. The long night of gloom is trying, but the morning is deferred in mercy, because if the Master should come, so many would be found unready. God's unwillingness to have his people perish has been the reason for so long a delay. 1883. It is true that time has continued longer than we expected in the early days of this message. Our Savior did not appear as soon as we had hoped. Again in 1883, it was not the will of God that the coming of Christ should be thus delayed. God did not design that his people, Israel, should wander 40 years in the wilderness. 1898. If the purpose of God had been carried out by his people in giving the message of mercy to the world, Christ would have come to the earth, and the saints would before this have received their welcome into the city of God. 1898 again, Desire of Ages. If the Church of Christ had done her appointed work as the Lord ordained, the whole world would before this have been warned, and the Lord Jesus would have come to our earth in power and great glory. 1903. If the people of God had preserved a living connection with him, if they had obeyed his word, we would today be in the heavenly Canaan. 1904. If the Adventists in the early days had proclaimed the third angel's message in the power of the Holy Spirit, the Lord would have wrought mightily with their efforts. Years ago, the inhabitants of the earth would have been warned. The closing work would have been completed, and Christ would have come for the redemption of his people. I read another statement. God has a tender love for his people. We can breathe, we can relax. Jesus raised his hands to the Father and pleaded for the remnant. He gazed upon them in pity, and with a voice of deep pity, he cried, "My blood, Father, my blood, my blood, my blood. You should not be here. I should not be here." But before we move on with this interesting and highly significant information, let us look at an affirmation of faith, this time in the things of obedience. Gospel of John, chapter 15, verse 10. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love. We know that. I go to the writings. God saves men not in sin, but from sin. And those who love him will show their love by their obedience. Back to the Bible, John 13, 17. If you know these things, happy are you if you do them. To the writings, Jesus requires implicit obedience and willing submission from all of his servants. The Bible again, the writings of St. Paul, Romans 8, 28. We know that all things work together for good to them that love God. Problems, difficulties, circumstances unexpected. We know that all things work together for good to them that love God. And we come back to our topic, this time the saga of the two queens. I'm reading from that same book, Prophets and Kings, various statements, various chapters, various paragraphs. we go back to ancient Iran, Persia, in the news today, but in biblical times, highly significant events and information that have a parallel for us in the immediate future. The great majority of the Israelites had chosen to remain in the land of their exile, Medo-Persia, rather than undergo the hardships of the return journey and the reestablishment of their desolated cities and homes. Under the decree issued by King Cyrus, nearly 50,000 of the children of the captivity had taken advantage of this decree, permitting their return from Persia back into the Promised Land. However, in comparison with the hundreds of thousands scattered throughout the provinces of Medo-Persia, these were but a mere remnant. A score of years passed by, and a second decree was issued, quite as favorable as the first. God, in his mercy, provided another opportunity for the Jews in the Medo-Persian realm to return to the land of their fathers. The Lord foresaw the troublous times that were to follow during the time of Queen Esther. Having refused to take advantage of the way of escape that God had provided, now they were brought face to face with death. Three segments of information thus far. You should not be here. The end of the world should have occurred long before this. An affirmation of faith, obedience, Christian obedience. Then the introductory information, the saga of the two queens, Esther and another queen. And our topic for the day, as I mentioned, and as it is printed in your nicely prepared bulletin, you should not be here, and the saga of the two queens. But I present a significant statement regarding a parallel of what happened way back there in ancient Persia, a land that my wife and I have visited, and the parallel of these last things in these last days. I read this statement. The trying experiences that came to God's people in the days of Queen Esther were not peculiar to that age alone. The same spirit will in the future lead to the pursuance of a similar course towards those who maintain their loyalty to God. To secure popularity and patronage, legislators in this country will yield to the demand for Sunday laws. Now, let's go to the saga of the two queens, and we choose to read from the Holy Scriptures. The entire book of Queen Esther. Now, obviously, we can't use every verse because that would take more time than we have opportunity to present. However, if you read turn to the book of Esther, Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job, Psalms. Turn to the book and we'll select certain statements, certain verses that are significant for the interesting information of the presentation of today. I read from Holy Scripture, the book of Esther, looking at chapter 1 and beginning with verse 1. Now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus, Xerxes in Greek history, Ahasuerus from Latin, but it was a Persian name. Now it came to pass in the days of King Ahasuerus, this is the Ahasuerus who reigned from India to Ethiopia. We lived in the land of India that is referred to here, now known under the modern terminology, Pakistan, along the Indus River, both sides of that magnificent river that provides water to those desert areas. 127 provinces from India, from Pakistan, all the way through the Middle East, down into Africa and to Ethiopia itself. Then it mentions in verse 2 that these events took place, as the end of the verse indicates, in Shushan, the palace. In modern English, we would say that Shushan was the capital city of the empire. like London, was the capital city of the British Empire for 100 years or more, way back in earlier times. So Shushan is the capital city, or a capital city, of the ancient Persian Empire. Well, I might add that there were actually three capital cities back there at that time, and these capital cities were induced according to the season of the year. In the Middle East, hot weather, they would go to a city up in the mountains where it was cooler. In the winter time, if it ever became winter in that locality, they would transfer government operations a little south and a little lower in the elevation range. But they had three capital cities in their ancient empire: Shushan, or Susa, and the Ecbatana city, and also Babylon. These were the three cities of the empire way back there at that time. Now, ancient Persia was a typical, or it is a typical Middle Eastern Muslim country. It was the second world empire, according to the information in the Book of Daniel. You remember that great image? And you'll get this again when their evangelist comes back and presents the information to the community here. The great image: gold, silver, brass, iron, and so forth. Babylon, Medo-Persia, the second in the flow of empirical time. Second world superpower after Babylon. Their language is related, or was related, to ancient Greek, ancient Latin, and the ancient Indian Sanskrit. But they used to write by taking damp clay, moist clay, and imprinting it with a triangularly shaped reed that would give what we now call cuneiform writing. Jewish prisoners of war over there in the Babylonian Persian Empire, there were three different deportations: 605 BC, 597 BC, 586 BC. And you remember that Daniel and three of his close relatives all were born as princes. They were from the royal house of Jerusalem. There were other deportations as well on a minor scale. And there were hundreds of thousands of Hebrew prisoners there in the Middle Eastern Empire in those particular times. Shushan, the palace, the capital city in operation at the time of the story in the Book of Esther, is located on the edge of the mountain range on the banks of the Ulai River, or it is in actual fact a large meandering irrigation canal called in the ancient languages a river. Shushan was a large city covering 3 square miles. Prince Daniel lived there, and he was prime minister of the Babylonian Empire, and he lived in this area 100 years before the Esther story from Old Testament information. If you take your computer and go to Google Earth and type in Shushan or Susa, you will see the modern city there. And if you look carefully on the banks of this meandering irrigation canal, a river, you will see a tomb there, a large conical tomb, which is the tomb where Daniel was buried 100 years or so before the events of the Book of Esther. Now, King Ahasuerus, mentioned in the first three verses here and throughout the Book of Esther, he was born in Persia in the province of Persis in the year 519 BC. There is much more known about this king in history than in the scriptures. His father conquered Babylon when he was a young man, and he was crowned king in 486 BC at the age of 36. During his entire reign, he was fearful of assassination. And he had a right to be fearful, and that plays into the story in the Book of Esther, because he ended his days in murder. At the age of 54, he was assassinated in, this is 465 BC, 9 years after the conclusion of the events in the Book of Esther. We look now at the era here, And we find that this is the third year, verse 3. It mentions here, in the third year of his reign. Now, provincial government leaders from the 127 provinces, from Pakistan to Ethiopia, were brought in for a rolling festival that lasted for half a year. They didn't bring in all the government officials from each province all at the same time. They brought them in consecutively so that the empire was not devoid of government leadership, but rather only from province after province for a short period of time during this rolling festival lasting half a year. Now, what was the political motivation of King Xerxes in bringing the leaders, government leaders from all of these provinces? Two things. He wanted to deepen the loyalty of the provincial rulers to the central government. The other thing was he wanted to secure their cooperation and participation in waging another war. He wanted to attack Greece, and he wanted to spread his empire further on. Now, after the rolling festival of half a year, verses 4 to 8 tell us that he held the festival for this time. Verse 5, when these days were expired, when the festival was over, the king made a feast for all of the people in the capital city. They had been hospitable to all of the visitors in, the government visitors from all of these other locations, and now he was giving them a local festival that lasted for just 1 week. And incidentally, verse 7 tells them that the royal wine was available. Verse 8, but they were not required to drink alcohol if they didn't wish to do so. And it would seem to indicate that there were so many Hebrews that were living some form of appropriate lifestyle that large numbers of people, perhaps even of the Persians, had decided that alcohol was not a satisfactory drink for them on social occasions, nor in their home, nor on any other occasion also. So there was this regular 1 week long festival. However, as you have in verse 9, Queen Vashti also conducted a festival, and this was in the zoological gardens there associated with the palace. Verse 9, also Vashti the queen made a feast for the women in the royal house which belonged to King Ahasuerus, palace and gardens that were associated with these things. You will remember the strange story as it is given in verse 11 that the king was merry, unfortunately. Government leaders were not responsible at that time for what was taking place. Verse 11, the king required Vashti, verse 11, the queen to come before the king with the crown. Only? Perhaps so. To show the people and the princes her beauty, for she was very fair to look upon. But she refused, verse 12, but the queen Vashti refused to come at the king's commandment. He was mad, defied by the queen. We know the story. What do we know about Queen Vashti? Very beautiful woman. She was in her late 50s at this stage. She was the great-granddaughter of King Nebuchadnezzar. She was an Arab girl, not Persian. She was the daughter of King Belshazzar, which is an interesting thing as well. And the Adventist Bible Commentary, Volume 3, page 467, tells us that Vashti was the daughter of a conquered ruler. Doesn't state which one, even though history tells us which one it was. She was born in Babylon. She was an Arab princess. She was born approximately 545 BC. When the Medo-Persian army invaded the city of Babylon, Vashti was not yet a teenager. And she was afraid of the army and its invasion. She rushed into the royal family quarters and hid herself in there, but she was found, taken prisoner, and grew up under the Persians and later given to Xerxes, Ahasuerus, as queen, as his wife. Chapter 1, verse 12 onwards, the queen Vashti refused to perform on behalf of the king. We know in verse 13 that the king said, okay, what are we going to do about this? We cannot have the queen defying the king. And so they said, look, the laws cannot be changed. You have banished her. What are we going to do? And they said, verse 15, what can we do with Vashti according to the law? She did not follow the commandment of the king. And then the royal advisor says, you've got to banish her. She has to leave the throne. The king seeks counsel. They recommend her banishment. And then, as it says in the same chapter here, that the decree was issued to all of the provinces in the provincial languages. And you see, they had scribes from each of the provinces who were familiar with the language of the province and therefore familiar with the national language of the empire. And so when there was a decree issued by the king, it would be taken in that language to the scribes. They would translate it into the language of their home province, and then the messengers on horseback would convey this information throughout the empire, 127 provinces. Now, we read also regarding these things that in this decree, it's stated quite clearly, Queen Vashti is deposed. She is no longer the queen of the empire. When you come to chapter 3, verse 1, after these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus was appeased, he remembered Vashti. He regretted his rash decree banishing her. Now what are they going to do? No queen, no royal representative this way. So it is decided in the capital city that they will choose a new queen. And in the familiar Sabbath school, Sunday school story, we know that the emissaries went around the empire, chose suitable girls as possible candidates to become queen, and ultimately a Hebrew girl in the city of Babylon was discovered. Her name was Hadassah. That's a Hebrew name, and it means myrtle, the myrtle tree. She was taken to the capital city of the Persian Empire. She is a Hebrew girl. Her cousin, who had adopted her when her parents died, her cousin, who had been caring for her, told her, when you go to the capital city, you better take a Persian name. You cannot take a Hebrew name in the capital city that way. So she chose the name Esther, Persian, meaning star. Now, many of you folk are familiar with changing names over a period of time. In fact, all of you, I'm sure, have European ancestors. Some of your ancestors came from countries where there is a different language spoken and where the family name is difficult for English-speaking Americans to understand. And so the name gets changed a little bit or modified in that way. Queen Esther did exactly the same thing at that way, but she was not yet the queen in the empirical circumstances yet in this situation. Now, regarding what happened to Vashti, it is interesting. We have often wondered, was she executed, was she banished, or was she brought back into the royal throne again? But Jewish history tells us that the king was unable by the law of the Medes and the Persians to seek reconciliation with Vashti. In other words, she was still living, but he was unable to bring her back to the throne. So she was obviously in banishment somewhere in one of the countries nearby to that locality. Now Mordecai, he was a descendant from the brother of King Saul of Palestine. Likewise, Hadassah, Esther, was a descendant of the brother of King Saul in ancient Palestine. Mordecai, he was a successful merchantman in Babylon, born in that area as a displaced prisoner of war in that situation, deportation. He was later transferred to Shushan, where he began to take prominence in government activity. Mordecai ultimately became prime minister of the Persian Medo Empire, as did Daniel in Babylon, as did Joseph in Egypt. Interestingly, in the Berlin Museum, and Berlin has some very remarkable museums, interestingly, in Berlin, there is a cuneiform tablet which had been inscribed, pressed with a wet clay with a triangular delta-shaped pen, the name of Marduk, which was the Persian way of spelling and pronouncing his name, and he was a servant, a prime minister for King Ahasuerus, King Xerxes. Quite a remarkable correlation of biblical information. Now, we come to the story of the queen here, and chapter 2, verse 18 refers to the banquet of this queen. Then, chapter 2, verse 18 tells us that the king made a great feast unto all his princes and his servants, even Esther's feast, coronation feast, if you please, of her becoming a queen. Now, how old was she? We'll go more into this information perhaps on another occasion, but she was just a young woman, not yet married, not yet promised in marriage. Now, around about this same time, we find that there was another man of royal dominion, and that was, he was known in the English version of the Holy Scriptures as Haman. Haman the Agagite. And you read this in chapter 3, beginning with, verse 1. After these things did King Ahasuerus, King Xerxes, promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite. What is an Agagite? An Agagite was a descendant of King Agag. Now, Agag was not the name of a man or the name of a king. It was a title, like Pharaoh in Egypt, like Kaiser in Deutschland, like Tsar in Russia. And so Agag of the Amalekites was the title of the king of those people. And here this man, Haman, is a descendant of their royal family. And you have four royal families represented: Hebrew, Amalekite, Persian, and Arab, all represented, tied up in this story. I tell you, it's bigger and better than anything that Hollywood could produce. And so Haman is now chosen as a prime minister of the empire there. He becomes very chummy with the king, and Haman takes the opportunity for revenge. 16 generations before time, almost all of his people were annihilated when the Hebrews made their migration from Egypt into the Promised Land. They destroyed, executed, killed most of the Amalekites. Some of them survived. And Haman was a descendant of the survivors, but a descendant of their royal family. He hated the Jews. A Hitler-style concept came into his mind. During World War II, how many Jews were annihilated from continental Europe? Was it 5 million? Was it 10 million? History doesn't even know, but the number runs in the millions. There are hundreds of thousands of Jews in the Persian Empire at the time of this story. There is a difference between ancient Persia and the Hitler story in continental Europe. Because you see, way back there in those times, the Jewish people were God's chosen people. At the time of Jesus, or a little after, the Hebrew people were dispossessed of their high privilege. And then its place, in the place of the Jewish people as God's people, it became the Christian church. And of course, the Christian church went down into the Dark Ages. Protestantism came up, and then the Advent movement came up to finish some of the work of the Protestant Reformation, particularly in review regarding the importance of the totality of the Ten Commandments. And so Haman gets talking with the king, and he, as you have in verse 8 onwards, he makes a suggestion to the king, and he says, look, there is a population right throughout your empire. They don't observe any of the laws of your empire. They need to be annihilated. And the king, without even making any inquiry, he says, yes, this is so. You go ahead and do it. And so Haman begins to enact plans to have Mordecai executed and all of the Jewish people. But remember, back then, the Jews were indeed God's chosen people. And if you bring animosity and antagonism against any of God's people, this is something you need to be careful about. This is something that God takes into account. And so this is the problem that has come in this situation. And the law regarding the assassination of all of the Jews is translated into the languages of the various communities, the various provinces, 127, and sent out to all of the people in government leadership in those parts of the world. And so the king and Haman continue on. Now, it's an interesting thing that when the information came widespread there in the capital city, Shushan, that there was the Jewish people obviously were upset. They did not know how to react to these things, and there was turmoil in the capital city and in a lot of the cities throughout the kingdom. And why the king would sign a law to exterminate a population within his empire without even inquiring what is the story, what is their sin, what is their guilt, what is their culpability, but just let it sign in the law and let it take place. An interesting thing that could happen that way. Now, it happened to be that during the one evening, the king was not able to sleep. But before we come to that particular aspect, we see that Mordecai sends a message to Queen Esther. This is the law. You're going to suffer as well. Something has to be done about it. And so she determines that she is going to fast 3 days, no food and no drink. You find this in chapter 5, verses 1 through 14, as the story develops. Now it came to pass on the third day, etc., after the fasting had taken place, that she begins her activity in making contact with the king. But she told Mordecai that she and her Persian servant girls are all going to fast 3 days, no food and no drink. Now you imagine trying to fast for that duration. I must admit that fasting, yes, it has its place, but it's not one of my favorite pastimes. And neither is going without drink one of my favorite pastimes. In fact, with the experience I've had of not being totally robust like some people might be, that I undergo a certain form of weakness in a situation of this nature. And so here's the queen. She's going to fast 3 days and three nights. Almost impossible. No water, no food. Then, when it is all over, she decides that she is going to make contact with the king. In fact, she said, as we have it in one of the earlier days, that the king had not called her for a whole month or so, and she was afraid to go in. But anyway, chapter 5, verse 1, now it came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel. She dressed for the occasion, went into the inner courts of the palace, and then she made an approach to the king, and the Bible tells us, verse 2, she obtained favor in his sight. And the king held out the scepter, she touched it, and she would not be executed. Jewish history adds some interesting detail and some interesting information. Remember, she had fasted 3 days, no food, no drink. And when she went in, this young woman, to see the king, she was desperately afraid. She could be executed for making an approach uncalled for in this way. And Jewish history tells us that there were the two girls that went in with her, and she was leaning on one girl for support. She'd gone without food for all this time. And Jewish history tells us that when she saw the king seated on the throne, not knowing what his reaction would be, that she literally fainted. She fell. The Persian servant girl lifted her to her feet again. And then the king came over to find out what was going on, and he realized what was taking place. He held out the scepter to her, and she therefore could not be executed in this uncalled for approach this way. Now, she made the request to the king. The king asked, "What do you want? Why are you come?" And she said, "I would like to have a banquet and invite you and one other person to that banquet." Now, she needed food, so they had the banquet. And the king says during the banquet that evening, "Well, what is your request?" She doesn't have the courage nor the strength to give an answer. And she said, "Your Majesty, please, let's have a banquet again tomorrow night, and I'll make my request to you." And so they had a banquet the next night. Now, in between these things, there was something else that took place, and that is that the king could not sleep one night. And so no TV, not even any radio in those days, no magazines to read. So he called one of the royal scribes, and he says, "Get all of the documents that are associated with our history, all of these things, and you read to me what it says in those things." So the scribe called for some of the documents, read them to the king, and in reading through these chronicles, they come to the one where Mordecai informed the king that two of the palace officials were planning to assassinate him. And so the king remembers this experience. He is fearful of assassination, and rightly so. And so he says to the scribe, "Okay, what reward was given to this fellow?" And the scribe, reading it, says, "Your Majesty, no reward was given to him at all. And so he conjures up in his mind and he says, "We need to honor this fellow." And so it happened to be that Haman came into the palace at this early morning hour, soon after daylight. And the king knows somebody's there, and he asks, "Who is it that's here?" And advisors there to the king makes the statement, "It is Haman, your prime minister, that has come in." The king says, call him. And so the king talks with Haman, and he says, "Look, I've got a man I wish to have honored. What do you think should be done to honor this man?" And Haman, thinking it's himself to be honored, says he should be paraded through the city on the royal stallion, and a messenger should go ahead and proclaim honor to him. And so the king says, "Good idea. Haman, you do that for Mordecai." Tables are turned. When God is in control, tables are turned. When the parade through the city is ended, chapter 4, verse, where do we find that in the scriptures? The information is here. Let me see. In chapter 6, verse 13, when the parade is over, Haman goes back home and he bitterly complains to his wife and his advisors. Verse 13, Haman told Zeresh, his wife. Haman was an Amalekite, an Arab. Zeresh was a Persian. And she said, "Look, if this man Mordecai is a Jew, you are finished." How did she know that? She said he would not succeed. Verse 30, Haman told Zeresh, his wife, all his friends, everything that had befallen him. He went through a pity party. Then his wise men and his wife said to him, look, if Mordecai is a descendant of the Jews before whom you have begun to fall, you will not prevail against him, but you will fall before him. Later that day, he was dead. Be careful how you treat God's people. We move on in this story. And so the second banquet takes place, chapter 7, verses 1 through 10. And Esther is feeling much better, thank you. She's had all the food that she needs to revive. She is drinking water again. And they have the second banquet. And then towards the end of the banquet, the king says, okay, Esther, now spill the beans. You tell me, what is it you want? And she said, there is a wicked man in your government who has arranged the assassination of me and all my people. And the king is afraid. He is perplexed. And she says, who is it that has made this arrangement? And she points to Haman in there at the banquet. She said, this is the guy that is guilty of this crime. The king is livid. He goes out into the palace gardens to think things over. And at that moment, Haman comes to the queen and he begs for his life with the queen. The king comes in, finds her in an embarrassing situation, and he orders that Haman be executed. On the same gallows, they're not English gallows where they put a rope around them. It's much crueler than that. On the same gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai the Jew. So the king asks Queen Esther, what should we do? What can we do for you? And she requests laws be executed, that the Jews not executed, put in a place with better terminology, and the Jews can protect themselves. As a result of these things, Mordecai was elevated to being prime minister, replacing Haman. And he sends out the decree this way, chapter 8, verses 1, chapter onwards, verse 9, and chapter 10. And while we're looking at chapter 8, verse 9, you might be interested to know that that verse is the longest verse in the Bible, chapter 8, verse 9. Now, that's as far as we go in the story today. But let's look at a summary and the parallelism. These events in this Sabbath school, Sunday school story took place over a period of 10 years. All of these things that are recorded in the Bible are accurate historically. We mentioned some of the circumstances in the Sabbath school lesson regarding the accuracy of Scripture, distribution of the human race around planet Earth. It gives a lot of answers, not all of them, but it gives a lot of answers that are helpful to us in the Holy Scripture. The information in the book of Esther regarding the queen are accurate, truthful events. Now, we need to keep in mind a parallel regarding these things of what took place in Queen Esther's day and what will take place in our days yet ahead of us. These things are important and significant. I read two or three statements. Esther chapter 6, verse 13. Esther chapter 6, verse 13. If Mordecai be of the seed of the Jews, if he is a descendant of the Jewish people, before whom you have begun to fall, you will not prevail against him. The banquet that evening brought the end of all of these things. You will fall before him. Be careful the way you treat God's people, to all and everyone. And I say this in all of our churches as I have the privilege of speaking. Esther chapter 8, verse 17. As a result of the events that took place, we find here at the end of the verse that many of the people of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them. A large number of people throughout the Persian Empire, from Pakistan to Ethiopia, suddenly converted to the Jewish religion, which was at the time God's true religion. We're going to find there is a parallel to these things as they take place in our world yet in the future. I have read earlier on the statement regarding the parallelism. Let me just give that to you again regarding these particular items of information. And that is not only regarding the events, but the parallel, let me see here, regarding these particular matters. I can pick this up this way. Yes, the trying experiences that came to God's people in the days of Esther were not peculiar to that age alone. The same spirit will in the future lead to the pursuance of a similar course towards those who maintain their loyalty to God. To secure popularity and patronage, legislators will yield to the demand for Sunday laws. That is the parallelism. There will be an attempt in this country and all around the world to annihilate God's commandment-keeping, Sabbath-observing, Advent-hoping people. That is the parallel between the Esther story and the events that are yet coming in the future on the horizon. I refer to these things again. Esther 8:17, many people converted to the Jewish religion. We will find there will be large numbers of people, multitudes, that will access to the people of God, commandment people of God in the last days. I read again, Prophets and Kings 605. Some people who today are living on the earth will see these words fulfilled. There will be more explanation regarding that statement 2 weeks' time. You'll remember we sang the hymn 111, It Took a Miracle, Miracle of Salvation, and that was referred to in from personal experience just earlier in our service. Our final hymn, number 632, Until Then. Remembering, of course, that when God calls us home, it will be at the time of the second coming, the resurrection and the translation of God's people. We invite you to take the hymn book and turn to number 632 and stand as we sing the words of this meaningful hymn.